Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another special edition of the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show, the 2019 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup quarterfinal review show. Excuse me. Pardon me. As we review the four big games that were this past Wednesday night in the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open Cup, and boy, oh boy, they did not disappoint at all. You do feel bad for some of those teams that have been eliminated in this tournament. But still, though, it was a damn good night of Open Cup action where you did see a close match. You saw something coming out of nowhere. You saw a complete destruction. And you also saw a game that should have ended in regulation continue with an extra 30 minutes, and then it was won in the penalty kick shootout, and then, of course, hilarity ensued before the penalty shootout happened. All I can say is that it was a lot of fun. It was a great night, but, you know, you have to feel bad for two sides that tried to get to the semifinals, and unfortunately, they were not able to. And we're talking about, of course, St. Louis FC and New Mexico United. First things first, I want to go to St. Louis FC for just a moment. And I just want to tell them, including New Mexico United as well, but I want to go to St. Louis FC first. Anthony Pulis, nothing to be ashamed about. Anthony Pulis' side did an awesome job giving those of you that support lower-level soccer, the lower divisions of American soccer, they basically put their heart and soul into it. A lot of fun, a lot of energy, and, you know, when you're taking on a team like Atlanta United, granted, it wasn't at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, you know, it wasn't there, but still, though, when you're getting a powerful starting 11 like they have, you know, you got to give them credit, especially, you know, with a manager like Frank de Boer, who probably has faced many, many opponents in the past as a player or even as a manager in the Ever Diversity for that KNVB Dutch Cup or, you know, as a player for the, you know, for the club sides he's played for. You know, national team manager he's been probably in the past. It's just been absolutely wonderful to see a guy like Anthony Pulis to get the most out of his side. And, you know, it was a pleasure having him on. It's a pleasure to have a man like Anthony Pulis on this show. Because why? Because this is a have a conversation with you, and at the same time, you know, it was just brilliant to have him on, and I was very, very excited to have him on this show to talk about everything going on with his club. And you know what? They had a great opportunity. Unfortunately, they probably were trying to get it into extra time. Didn't happen. Pity Martinez does the job, and then, of course, that penalty converted by Josef Martinez, just, you know, it's in the fourth minute of second half stoppage time. I don't think St. Louis FC had enough left in them to do any damage. You know, once that Pity Martinez goal got in, that was the end of that. And all you can say is, you know, good job, excellent job by St. Louis FC to give everyone, you know, something to talk about. A great job, a great run, talking about being, you know, a part of the water cooler the next day, coming on this show every single time, you know, he's advancing to the next round. I appreciate that. I also want to thank the St. Louis FC club for giving me Anthony Pulis' time to coming on the show, because, you know, look, this is a magical cup. No matter what the theme is, every single season, whether it's a new theme or a repeat theme, it's always about the cup. It's always about these games. It's just wonderful to discuss, and I have a lot of fun talking about it. Because why? Because I care about it just as much as those players care about it. Yes, I know there's a Champions League spot available, but still, though, it's just absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful to talk about these teams that advance from either the lower levels, the amateur levels, going into facing MLS sides and seeing how long they can last in this tournament. It's just wonderful to discuss and wonderful to talk about. I love doing it. And, you know, New Mexico United, you know, that's a side that I believe is going to be rooted deep in American soccer for a long period of time. You know, what they have done in their first year. First things first, I want to give credit to those supporters in Albuquerque, New Mexico. First things first, those guys are just absolutely fun to watch every time they sell out the lab at Isotopes Park. They do a great job in selling out the lab, making everyone look, you know, they look brilliant, New Mexico United. I know it's tough to lose the men's soccer program at the University of New Mexico. It's their loss that they're cutting that program, but it's Albuquerque's gain. It's their gain to get New Mexico United. And I'll be honest, I didn't expect this to happen. I wasn't expecting that to happen. All I can tell you is this, is that it is absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. That to see those supporters going bonkers. And let me just say this. To do what New Mexico United did on the road. To do what they did in as the Road Warriors of the Open Cup this year. It is absolutely unfathomable how they got all that results going their way. It's amazing how that happened. I'm still flabbergasted that they went on the road every single round and they found ways to get the result that they needed. It's just been wonderful. It's been unbelievable. And you know what? The truth is this. When Kevon Frater was suspended for the quarterfinals because of the yellow card accumulation law, of course, three yellow cards in this tournament and you get a one-match suspension, it doesn't matter how quick it is or how spread out it is, you're going to serve a one-match suspension. I think that was part of their downfall for New Mexico United. But listen, give credit to Minnesota United for doing the job that they had to do at home. They blasted them off the pitch. What a destruction they put out there. But still, though, give credit, please give credit to New Mexico United for having a run that I don't think I've ever seen before, obviously since 2017 with FC Cincinnati. But FC Cincinnati mostly did all their home, you know, all their matches in the Open Cup at home. back in 2017, with the exception of being drawn for their summit, for their quarterfinal match. They were drawn in their quarterfinal match going on the road to Miami FC. And they did it on the road. Unfortunately, they lost Jibby Fall, who was basically the only man scoring the goal, or the goals, if you want to say, all over the place. And look, they didn't have him against the Red Bulls. They were leading 2-0, but then they fell apart once Gonzalo Verón made it 2-1. Then Bradley Wright Phillips gets the tying goal. And then it became extra time winner for BWP once again for Bradley Wright Phillips in the in extra time for the winner, for the match winner. So, you know, once again, it's a situation. It's a situation, once again, that it's tough. It's very, very tough. All you can say is that you have an opportunity to go this deep. Who knows if they'll ever have another opportunity like that again to go as deep as they could. But once again, give these sides credit. Give them immense credit for going as deep as they did. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things you can say. It's a lot of things that, you know, you can talk about. But still, though, what you cannot say is that they never played with heart, because they did. New Mexico United, what a fantastic job that they had here. Unfortunately, it ends in the quarterfinals. The same thing with St. Louis FC. It ends in the quarterfinals. All you can do, all you can say, is that this tournament is absolutely unbelievable. And when you see these sides battling out for the national championship of American soccer, and they are answering the call, they want to play hard, they want to go and be, you know, have a, make a name for themselves, to go out there and to say, yeah, we're here, we're roaring, we're, you hearing us right now? Look at what we're doing. Look what we did. We took out your Colorado Rapids. We took out your FC Dallas. And when it comes to St. Louis FC, yeah, we took out your Chicago Fire. We took out FC Cincinnati, even though this is their first year in MLS still. We took them out. Hear us. We're roaring. We're ready to go. Look how dangerous they were, calculated. When it comes to New Mexico United, it's a combination of Kevon Frater being suspended, and it's also New Mexico United losing their way after Santi Mowar started Upset City, and then Minnesota United said, you know what, not on our watch, watch what we do to you. Case of St. Louis FC, once again, it is, we're here, we want you, we want to take you out, okay, you got us, but we're still here, and we're not going to stop until we're dead, and that's what happened. That penalty basically signaled the beginning of the end for St. Louis FC. But once again, Troy Lesney of New Mexico United, Anthony Poulos of St. Louis FC, you two did a marvelous job in this Open Cup tournament. Congratulations on a hell of a run. And let's see what you two can do in the 2020 campaign of the U.S. Open Cup. Because you know what? I can't wait for this to come. I cannot wait for this to be a big time thing, because it's just one of those things where you have to say, I want to see what they can do next year. and it should be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. We're going to have some fun. So let's get it on. Let's have some fun. And let's have a great time with the Open Cup. Once again, the Open Cup is here. Let's go get it. Let's enjoy it. And let's go ahead and have some fun. All right, ladies and gentlemen, great show for you tonight. As always, we will have on the people who cover their respective sides in American soccer. And as we get ready to open the show, we head on down to the Peach State in Atlanta, Georgia. As we get ready to talk to, of course, the man that analyzes everything Atlanta United. And that man who works for 92.9 FM, The Game in Atlanta, Georgia, he is the analyst for Atlanta United, and that is, of course, Jason Longshore. Jay, welcome back. How are you, and what's going on?
Going well. Getting ready for Open Cup semifinals for the first time with Atlanta United.
Now, you see, that's the one thing I was curious about, because as you know as well as I do, even though this is only the third year of Atlanta United being in MLS and existing as well, twice they get to the quarterfinals, twice they get eliminated from the quarterfinals. Did you believe in that opening 45? While, yes, Atlanta was the better side, did you feel that there was some form of pressure for Atlanta to do something magical here? Because St. Louis FC, I thought they had a game plan of at least bunkering at times defensively and trying to catch Atlanta on the counter.
I think there was pressure because of the quality of the lineup that Atlanta put out there. With that type of lineup, I mean, it's first choice, even with the debut of Emerson Hyneman, it's a first choice lineup. And with that comes the expectation of advancing. I didn't really feel that pressure at that point. I've seen St. Louis this season in USL Championship play, and I know kind of the way that they're going to approach it, and they didn't really surprise me. They were a little more defensive than I thought they might be. I thought they might go with two up top and try to put a little more pressure on and be more direct. But they came out and played the game that most lower division teams play at this stage. They try to extend it as far as they can. They don't want to risk anything. Atlanta just controlled the middle of the field and was able to eventually break through. And moments like the one you get on the goal with Emerson Hyneman on the takeaway and Pity Martinez burying it, that's why you spend the money on a player like Pity Martinez. It's just a moment of sheer quality out of him.
Is that the Pity Martinez you were expecting that night, especially during the season? I know there's been a lot said, I understand, or hearing through the grapevine, Argentinian press kind of blasting De Boer and Atlanta United on, I guess, the usage of Pity Martinez. I didn't hear the whole thing. Obviously, I don't speak Spanish, but the truth is, you know, that's what you wanted from a guy like Pity Martinez for Atlanta United. I know he's not a full replacement for Almiron, but still, though, that's what you brought him over for.
Yeah, you brought him here for those moments, and that's. I think there's been a lot of conversation as of late about is Pity playing enough defense and things like that. And look, he's not here to play defense. Pity Martinez is here to give you magic. And that's a goal that I think a lot of people kind of just looked at it and like, oh, yeah, that's nice. That's a difficult goal to convert. And that's just unbelievable quality and unbelievable confidence in your quality. And you've had some comments out of Argentina here lately. Pity Martinez gave an interview to Fox Sports Argentina, and the initial tweet that made the rounds was a comment about, you know, if he had his way, he'd be at River Plate. And these are things that we've heard Nicolas Ladero say in Seattle about Boca Juniors. These are things we've heard Kaká say about AC Milan when he went to Real Madrid. I mean, these are things you say about a club that has a strong place in your heart. And in the conversation, there were different things about Frank de Boer criticized Pity Martinez after a couple of matches, criticized him after Montreal because he said that he was making mistakes that were dangerous to the team. And Pitti took exception to that going out into the media, which I can understand from Martinez's point. I can also understand DeBoer. That's a post-match comment right after the match. Like, he goes in to speak to the media immediately after leaving the field. It's not something you really have a chance to discuss. And that, what, to me, it was a comment that was overblown, because the rest of the context from DeBoer was, it wasn't just that Pitti Martinez was making mistakes. It was that he was giving the ball away when the team had advanced up the field and was exposed. It was very specific, and it was, we can't give the ball in these moments, and I think he might be tired, and this is where I need to pull him out of the match. It was very deliberate in what he said, and I think half of that got cut off in the way it was reported. So you have a situation with Pitti where there's a price tag and there's expectation, and he hasn't met the full expectation. But he's had his moments this season. He's had some very good moments. He needs to start putting together good performances overall.
Yeah, I thought he had a very good performance. And I thought that I think, who knows, maybe that could be his coming out party for Atlanta United for the rest of the season. And then, of course, that semifinal matchup, which the boys will be traveling to Orlando at Explora Stadium over on Church Street, as I like to call that place, the Purple Palace on Church Street. But that's a nice little stadium there in Orlando. I've been there already once, and it's great. I want to get back there again, of course. And don't worry, Jay, I want to get down to Mercedes-Benz myself and take a look for, you know, what Atlanta United can do at home. But let me just say this. Was there also relief that now that they're out of the quarterfinal round, they're finally in the semis? Was there a relief that now this club has reached the semifinals?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the biggest question with Atlanta United fans and just the community as a whole is, where does the Open Cup rank? You know, how important is it? And coming off of an MLS Cup title, I don't know what people expected this season. And Tata Martino used the Open Cup as a way to give younger players minutes, and that was the number one goal of it. Frank DeBoer's come into it to win the thing. I think from the first match, he has come in with lineups that, yes, there's some rotation. And yes, it, like, this week was an opportunity to give Emerson Heineman his first match with the club. But Heineman's not a player here that's not going to be expected to contribute down the stretch. I think he will get plenty of minutes with the first team as the season goes on. And you want to use these games to rotate a little. You want to give guys minutes who aren't getting them, but you also want to win these games if you're Frank DeBoer. And he's a player who, you know, a player and a manager who took the cup seriously in the Netherlands with Ajax. And I didn't really expect that to be any different here. It hasn't been so far. And I think now that you're looking ahead to a semifinal against Orlando, you can't avoid taking this one seriously. It's Orlando and Atlanta, and that's a matchup that neither team likes each other very much.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree, because and it's even refreshing to hear about, you know, a manager like DeBoer who does take every single cup competition seriously, that he wants to go out there. In your mind, with the amount of minutes that Emerson Heineman got, obviously there was always a lot of hype about him. I know it's only his first match, but still, if I can ask, what'd you think about him? What did you like from him? What are some things you didn't like?
I loved it. I thought he grew into the match, which was about what we expected. I mean, this is a player who hadn't started a match since last December when he was on loan at Hibs. It showed early on. I think it showed. It showed he was still trying to get to know his teammates and tendencies and things like that. I liked his work rate. I love his talent. I love his skill set. I think it's a perfect fit for what Atlanta United wants to be. And when the signing was announced, you know, I thought back to his performances at the U20 World Cup in 2015 and some of those early performances with Fulham, where you see a player that is not typical that the U.S. produces. And I think with him and Darlington Nagbe in the same midfield, with Atlanta wanting to be a possession-oriented team, those are two guys that can dominate possession and just not lose the ball and create dangerous opportunities with it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, you know, look, the more weapons you can find, the more weapons you can definitely put out there in the starting 11. That would be interesting to see, you know, maybe in the future, Nagbe with Heineman, what they can do. I think that could be even a more dangerous attack for Atlanta keep on going in this situation. So, as we really wind down here on this segment, Orlando is, as always, the next opponent in the semifinals. And I know that, you know, your partner, your play-by-play voice partner, Mike Conte, has said Atlanta is 3-0 against Orlando right now. Are you afraid of a wrinkle that James O'Connor might throw at you going into the semifinals in the beginning of August?
Not really afraid of a wrinkle in it, but I'm concerned because Orlando is in a spot that they've never been in before. This is the biggest match for Orlando City in their club's history. And how better, you know, I don't think they could write a script outside of knocking Atlanta out of an MLS Cup, you know, Eastern Conference final. But to beat Atlanta in the Open Cup semi when Atlanta is slated to host the final if they advance, for your first win over your rival. And I know people want to always argue about the word rival when it comes to Atlanta and Orlando. Whatever you want to call it, there's animosity. These teams do not care for one another. It comes out every time they've played. And Orlando will be up for this game in a way that we probably haven't seen. And how they manage that will be the key. How they handle that emotion will be the key against the team in Atlanta that has been there before and generally handles those types of moments pretty well. I'm curious about the crowd. I'm really curious because it wasn't a great crowd in Orlando on Wednesday. I think with Atlanta coming to town, that will change the vibe a bit. But the Open Cup in some markets is still a bit of an education, and I want to see how Orlando turns out for that Open Cup semifinal coming up.
Well, you're afraid of if the game goes to penalty kicks, there's going to be a rush of wall supporters heading over to the opposite side, aren't you?
That was a spectacle. We were watching it. We were doing a post-game show on soccer down here and watching that whole thing go down. And I mean, I've read some things afterwards that it was kind of haphazard with the way everything broke down, and there were New York City supporters who were supposed to be in that area, and security just kind of fell apart, and that's a shame to see. But the actual spectacle of watching the supporters make the run from one end of the stadium to the other and get in behind the goal, that's pretty cool. And that's one of those moments, you know, like we talk about emotional capital a lot and how clubs need that as things to point to. For Orlando, that's something that will go down in their club's history, no doubt.
It will. That's going to be one of those things that everyone's going to have to worry about in Open Cup play. If you're going to be playing down at Explorer Stadium, do not go to penalties and let Orlando pick the wall side. I think that's what you got to do, and I think you should beat them that way. Or else you're going to face that, and that was kind of funny. But let me ask you this. How interesting would it be for Atlanta? You win the MLS Cup in 2018, and you have an opportunity to get to the final in 2019 of the Open Cup, and it's back-to-back seasons with a trophy.
It's an amazing start for the club to have the year that you had in 2017 as a debut. You win MLS Cup in 18, go to CONCACAF Champions League for your first time in 19, and then win the Open Cup. It's hard to complain about that if you're Atlanta fans. It's hard to say that it's not one of the best starts for a franchise in American soccer history. It's a big, big deal. And I think the possibility of Atlanta hosting the Open Cup final and the crowd that they could draw for that, in either way, I mean, if Atlanta gets past Orlando, which is not a foregone conclusion, but you get Atlanta in the final at Mercedes-Benz Stadium and either a rematch of MLS Cup 2018 with Portland or Minnesota, which has always been a bit of a measuring stick when those teams have met. And Minnesota's come into the Benz before and won in 2017. So either way, it would be a great thing for the tournament as a whole. But I think the semifinal will be amazing as well. I think both of these semifinals are going to be great. This is an opportunity for this tournament to grow. I think it's at another level than we've seen in the past.
And that's what we want. We want the level to keep on growing and growing and growing, and I cannot wait for that level to get there. Jay, thank you again, as always. I'll talk to you again soon. Have a good night, and enjoy your week of MLS action. No problem at all. Take
care. Appreciate it. You too.
Sure thing. Thanks. Bye-bye. Jason Longshore, 92.9 FM, The Game in Atlanta, Georgia, radio analyst of Atlanta United as they move on to the semifinals, and talking about, again, what a show it was down at Explora Stadium in Orlando as Orlando City in penalties gets the big win over New York City FC. And fun things are happening in the seats. Join me right now from the mainland, my SB Nation colleague. It is, of course, Michael Sitrow from the mainland. Michael, welcome back. How are you and what's going on?
Doing good, Dan. Thanks for having me back on. Everything's kind of crazy down here.
Oh, I know. You know, just like Atlanta United, Orlando City has had issues getting out of the quarterfinal round. Now you finally get out of it. Was that pressure to get out of the quarterfinal round looming for Orlando?
I think it was, but it really was not something that the team had a whole lot of chance to think about, even because of the way that the fixture schedule has been over the last couple of weeks, especially with the trip to Philadelphia, getting the game postponed till Sunday, and then having to play in the afternoon. And then the plane that was supposed to bring the team back didn't have enough seats, so the entire contingent couldn't come back Sunday night. They lost an entire day of preparation on Monday, having to travel back Monday afternoon. And so that just basically left them one day for recovery and preparation for a pretty good New York City FC side that Orlando hasn't beaten or hadn't beaten in six consecutive tries. So I don't know that they had a lot of time to think about the pressure of the quarterfinals and trying to get through, but this was definitely something that James O'Connor made a priority this week.
I got to ask this. What is going on with travel issues this year? I mean, we know with Montreal it was immigration issues, not being allowed to be landing in Logan Airport in Boston. Red Bulls had travel issues going to Atlanta. Now you're talking about Orlando City having travel issues. Is this the season of travel issues in MLS?
Yeah, it might be. But, the with the congestion and the fixture schedule so heavy, Orlando didn't want to play that game against Philadelphia after it got postponed Saturday night. They didn't want to play it on Sunday. They wanted the league to respect their attempt to be in the quarterfinals of this knockout tournament and to the chance to move to the semifinals. And the league denied that request. There's plenty of time in September. I mean, Orlando is in a stretch. That pushed them into 5 games in 15 days. And they were already in the middle. They were already in the middle of a schedule that's of playing 9 competitive games in, I believe, 26 days. So it's a crazy schedule. I know everybody's going through it because of the Gold Cup, but I mean, it's really been especially difficult, I think, for Orlando in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Hopefully, I think the league has to revisit the way they do the scheduling now. Well, that'll be another show for another time, but. So from your vantage point, how funny was it to see members or the supporters at the Purple Wall running from one end of Explora Stadium to the other just to watch the penalty kick shootout and give support to the empty section along the Church Street side of the stadium?
Yeah, it was surreal. I mean, we were sitting in the press box and we were kind of remarking on the fact that they were about to set up in the empty end. There were a few New York City visiting supporters up in the upper deck on that end, but basically the wall and the west side of the stadium was sold for this game. Midweek game, terrible weather, because we've been getting a lot of that this summer. So I think we had about a little over 7,000 people in the stands, and when they took it down to the empty end, that was not going to sit well with the supporters, and they all started to run down the other end to at least try to get a better view of the penalty shootout. And when they got there, of course, we saw security scrambling to try to kind of keep them confined to maybe the corner. But they, you know, one or two guys got through and ran into the middle sections. They tried to kind of chase them out. And then, you know, just I think the entire crowd said, yeah, that's where we want to be, right behind the goal. And they just kind of overwhelmed security. And I think at some point somebody must have made the call, hey, don't even try to stop them because it's not worth the trouble, the effort. Somebody's going to get hurt. So, you know, the supporters stormed into the south end of the stadium. And I have to say it was, you know, something that we were remarking about in the press box and kind of were a little bit stunned and kind of a little bit in awe of it, actually. And then, of course, the team saw it, and they, I think, were buoyed by it. I think they really responded to the fact that their supporters demanded to be down there in front of them and urging them on. And, of course, they went on to win the penalty shootout.
Yep, I agree with you there. I mean, it makes no sense to block them. How good has Greenwood been for you this season? Has he been getting a lot of games? Has he been just being used for Open Cup? To me, he had a stellar match that night. I thought it was stupendous in the shootout. So many near misses, or shall I say, so many opportunities for New York City FC to put that ball on frame, and he's just right there to make the stop, and two huge stops in the shootout to put Orlando into the semifinals.
Yeah, he's only been really used in the Open Cup, and he's been, you know, he's a guy who played some games at the end of last year and kind of was considered maybe the favorite going into camp to win the job because they didn't really bring in a veteran, and it was just Greg Ranjitsing, who James O'Connor knew from his time at Louisville City. And then toward the end of camp, they brought in Brian Rowe as a trialist, and Brian Rowe played well enough, and his leadership was really good, and they made the decision to sign him, and he's won the job, and he's played, you know, a little bit shaky at the beginning of the season, I think, but I think he's played mostly solid, but hadn't been really the guy making the saves that would earn points. But I think he finally made a save that that earned the team, you know, at least a point at Philadelphia with a tremendous late save on a Jack Elliott header Sunday. I mean, it's crazy to think this is going to be Orlando's third game this week when they play the Crew tomorrow, but he made a tremendous save there. But Greenwood has been doing well. I think that Greenwood is probably the most acrobatic of Orlando City's goalkeepers. He's probably the most athletic, but they call him Spider-Man, and he certainly played like Spider-Man on Wednesday. He made two tremendous saves in regulation and the extra time, and then, of course, the two big saves in the penalty shootout. So he's been really good. Grinny he's a fan favorite because he played well last year when he got his opportunities. And, you know, he's a young guy, and he's still learning, but he may have a bright future.
No, I think so too. And, you know, I'll say this right now. I mean, I could be wrong, but to me, he kind of looks like a carbon copy of Tim Melia of Sporting Kansas City. What would you think?
I think they have some similar qualities. I think their body types are a bit similar, although I think Adam's shorter. He needs to work on his distribution, but I think other than that, he's proven in MLS play that he can compete at this level. He just has some things he needs to work on.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think there's some similarities with Melia of Sporting Kansas City with Greenwood, but I definitely agree with you. He does need to work on a few things to be put over the top. Chris Muller in the 61st minute, great header from Nani. What has Nani been since coming over here to Orlando? Was he proven to everyone in Central Florida about how well he can play with everybody and anybody?
I mean, he's world class. He's everything that really Orlando fans expected, and you know, his quality is such that he looks like he's going to easily eclipse anything Kaká did here. So that says a lot right there. But he's been a guy who has come in. He's worked hard. He's, you know, he seems to be a humble guy. He doesn't he's a little bit flashy on the field at times, but and he likes to entertain. In a lot of ways, he's like Kaká that way. I think Kaká was a little bit flashy on the field, but not maybe to Nani's extent. Maybe Nani even has a little bit of a little bit more swag to his game. But he's been great. He's been a leader. He's He's fit in with the team well. I mean, I think we saw that the other night when, against Philadelphia when he served in a nice cross that Dwyer headed in, and the two had a nice moment celebrating together. But he's been just world class. I mean, he the last time we're getting ready to play Columbus, so this is fresh in my mind. But when Orlando went to Columbus and City had never won there, he had just had two world class, assists with the outside of his right foot to provide goals for Chris Mueller and Tesho Akindele. So he's been fantastic. A lot of people doubted him and said, you know, he's a broken down aging star, you know, he's going to be doing the retirement thing. And I think a lot of people said that about Wayne Rooney. I think a lot of people said that about Zlatan Ibrahimovic. So there's a reason why these guys, you know, earned what they did and the success that they've had. And I think they're showing that you know, world-class players, even if they're not in their prime, are still, you know, plenty good enough to be leaders in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, I know Dom Dwyer has always been, you know, spot on how he plays and how aggressive he is out there. And I know he's just coming off probably some bad form and, you know, his confidence is not high. How tough was that to see him not take that penalty well? Because I was wondering if he was going to make a mess of it, and he kind of did.
Yeah, you know, I've never have liked the stutter step approach to penalty taking, and we've actually been critical of – that's one of the few things we were critical of Nani this year, is he had a couple of these stutter step penalties actually in back-to-back games, and he didn't convert either one of them. Although he has had some other successful penalties. It was tough because Dwyer actually had scored in two of his last three games. The only one of those three that he didn't score in prior to that was the game where Orlando was down two men when he came in. So he wasn't going to get any service that way. So I think that from what I can tell, he looks a lot more energized and a lot more confident since he returned from his paternity leave. You know, he and Sidney LaRue had a child recently, and since he's been back, I think he looks a little bit more like the old Dom. It was unfortunate they didn't score his penalty, but I don't think that Dom's ever been like a world-class penalty taker. It would have been great for him to make it, but at least, you know, the other five guys made theirs.
That's exactly right. Well, I agree with you there. The two things I hate every time I watch or cover a match, I hate short corners and I hate the stutter step penalty taking. I agree with you on that one. That's just wasting the time. That's just trying to be too fancy, too cute, and then you screw it up. So I'm in your league right there. I think I should be thrown out, but that's just me. So once again, it's Atlanta United. This time, mm-hmm. The Orlando City, in through the draw, is going to host the semifinals. And you have an opportunity because, as you know, Orlando is third in the final hosting draw while Atlanta is in first. So, you know, you have an opportunity to not just knock off Atlanta United to get to the final, but you knock off Atlanta to maybe not host the final. Is that a double daunting challenge for your rivals? Or against your rivals?
Well, the thing is, this is going to be really the first meaningful game. I mean, obviously regular season games are meaningful to some degree, but I think that the league has tried to make this a rivalry. I think Atlanta, since they've come into the league, have tried to make this a rivalry, but it's not really a rivalry, and I don't think it can be a rivalry until both sides have blooded the other, and Orlando City doesn't have any wins against Atlanta United yet. So this would be a great opportunity for Orlando City to create that rivalry with a win in a knockout stage game. And, you know, if they could pull it off, and they've been close a few times, if they could pull off the win, they would, certainly just making the final would be incredible. But also then you'd have two scenarios here. If Portland beats Minnesota, Orlando hosts the final. If Portland loses to Minnesota, you've got Adrian Heath, a longtime Orlando City coach, coaching against his old team in the final, and also Kevin Molino, who is a beloved, star player here, playing for Minnesota United against the Lions in a cup final. So a lot of great storylines. And of course, the huge task is first beat Atlanta at home, and you know Orlando hasn't done that anywhere yet. So hopefully, I'm sure that game will be prioritized. So we will see what James O'Connor comes up with. This will be the second meeting between the teams this year.
Yep, absolutely. Michael, thank you again for your time. I always appreciate it. Good luck in the semifinals against Atlanta. I know you'll be over there. It's going to be exciting. And have a good night, and I'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
No problem at all. And that is, once again, Michael Sitrow from the mainland, SB Nation colleague, talking about Orlando City's victory over New York City FC in the penalty kick shootout after a 1-1 draw through regulation and extra time. This man did not think he'd be back on my show. This man thought that New Mexico United was going to run roughshod all over his own side. Well, he's here. He's back. It's the one and only Bruce McGuire from DeNord. A complete destruction after going down 1-0 by New Mexico United. And then all of a sudden, Bruce, somewhere, somehow, your side turns it on. And, oh, my goodness, it was 5-1 at half.
Good to be with you, Daniel. The for a minute there, I was horrified that my prediction might come true, because the first six, 7 minutes of that game was all New Mexico, and they got a set piece, and they scored way too easily on it. And I'm sitting there thinking, you got to be kidding me.
And then the light switch went on.
Yeah, and it went on from the kickoff. There was no hesitation. They got smacked in the face, and they came out flying. And the coach of New Mexico, his name Troy Lesense. Is that his name? Is that how you pronounce it?
It's actually Troy Lesney, actually. Troy Lesney.
Lesney. Okay. I put an extra E in there and turned him into a Brazilian.
That's right. How dare you? No.
he even said after the game that the level they turned it up to was just not something that New Mexico had seen this year, with the speed and the accuracy and the relentlessness. And you could just see the determination in the Minnesota players' eyes that, you know, they were not going to take it easy. And that's, you know, that's what an MLS team should do in that situation. They should be all in. They lined themselves up to perform this way because they rotated out almost the entire squad last Saturday up in Montreal. And they won that game as well, 3-2. A comeback win. They were down 1-0 and 2-1, and they won it 3-2. And it just really set them up to have everybody rested, everybody ready, and they really took it to them. It was quite impressive there for a while. I think they had 6 shots and 5 goals in the first half.
Oh, yeah. That was unreal from what I saw. I was, like, flabbergasted. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Look, I know you guys, you know, love Christian Ramirez over there with Minnesota, with, you know, with your time in the NESL and, you know, the short time he was in MLS with you guys. But the truth is this, Angelo Rodriguez is on another level. Nothing against Ramirez at all. You know, I know he was great for you guys, but still, Angelo Rodriguez was a man on a mission, and he was at the right place at the right time for a hat trick, 10th minute, 19th minute. The final minute of regulation before the halftime whistle blew. What is about Angelo Rodriguez that just gives Minnesota that edge that no one expects them to have?
Well, the only thing I can really think of is his strength, because it's not about speed, and he doesn't have a quick turn, but he has a strength that you don't see a lot in MLS, where he can hold the ball like there's no tomorrow. If you put a long ball up to him, it has to be to his chest and his feet, because he's not going to outjump anybody. He's not going to turn him in the box and get a quick shot off or any of these things. But he's playing better combinations, and I think his teammates understand him better. and he's drifting off the ball better, which is one thing he didn't do for a while either. He wasn't moving those center backs out of the way by drifting. And all those things have come together. You see Darwin Quintero is a man possessed right now, and there's just several guys that have contributed to a really nice build. They went through a real streak where neither Rodriguez or Quintero was able to score, and I was pretty convinced that it was because other teams were focusing so much on shutting down Darwin Quintero. And that's fine. Teams do that to other teams, but my belief always has been that if a defense is going to focus so much on one attacking player, that's going to leave holes for other players to exploit, and nobody was exploiting those. And I think that's a real problem that they faced. And one of the other boosts that they've had in the last month has been from Kevin Molino.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin Molino has definitely been a man possessed as well. You got to give him credit for going out there. And, of course, I guess coming back from the Gold Cup early, being eliminated from the group stage in the Gold Cup, that gives Minnesota an advantage in the midfield, definitely. And, you know, what they did is just – I mean, I'm still shaking my head in disbelief. 52 minutes it took from the 10th minute by Angelo Rodriguez all the way to the second half. Miguel Ibarra finishes it up in the 62nd minute in the second half. 52 minutes worth of goals, 6 unanswered for your guys against New Mexico United. That is just an unbelievable result in what Minnesota – I think now everyone in MLS knows what Minnesota United is made of. I really think now they've woken up. And, you know, if it takes them to really wake up, you know, the way they have in league play and in this Open Cup match against New Mexico United in the quarterfinals – I'll say this right now for you, Bruce. I think Minnesota United, they are a dangerous side that I don't think anybody wants to play against right now, East or West.
Yeah, they've got Dallas coming up on Saturday here at home, and that will be a fantastic test because I love all those young players in Dallas and what they do. But, you know, for me, the offseason brought in a lot of veteran players for Minnesota, and I heard people talking – inside the team from we're building for the future. And I've said, you can't have players this age and call it building for the future. You have to win now. And they do have the experience to win now. So this is really vital for them, this stretch here, to make sure they get in the playoff positions, because their last 8 to 10 games are brutal. Several on the road, all against the top teams in both the East and the West, especially the West. And, you know, it's going to go – I still think it's going to go right down to the wire on the playoffs. And if you can take a chunk of your season right in the middle of it and ride it high, you can make it into the playoffs. It's an important thing. And then once the playoffs start, everything's possible, which is pretty exciting.
No, it really is. And also, let me just say this as well. No offense to the National Sports Center. I know they were a great home for Minnesota United, even when they were the Minnesota Stars. I mean, you know, they needed a place to play back in the days of the NASL. And then once they came, you know, into MLS, you know, Allianz Field opening this year for Minnesota United, how quickly has that been a fortress for the home side, for the fans, for the supporters in the Wonder Wall? I mean, to me, I think that's the switch that really turned it on for this Minnesota United side to really become a dangerous team.
Well, I keep waiting for them to tell us that it's a mirage and it's a fake and the next game will be, you know, somewhere in a dirt field, because it's that incredible. And I'm not a dreamer. I'm not a, you know, call something fancy when I think it's regular. It's blown my mind how nice that stadium is. And a couple of weeks prior to this Open Cup game, they beat Cincinnati there 7-1. And that place was
yes,
so loud. It was just nuts in there. And with each goal, it got louder. And by the end of that game, the whole stadium was standing and chanting. And, you know, at the end of the home games, when they win, the crowd sings the Oasis song, Wonderwall.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually when that's done, people start filing out. Nobody left. And the chanting just got louder. After the game, you know, this was 5 minutes, 6 minutes after the game is over, and the chanting is still going. And there's a real sense of something big is building right now. And, you know, let's see what they do in the transfer window, too. I mean, they've got, you know, they have plenty of space to add some real key players to this team. And they're going to need it down the stretch because we all know injuries happen. You don't know where and when, but they mm-hmm. do happen. And they need a little more depth on this team to really take them over the top. And then, you know, they're not going to be in the elite teams of the league. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. But like you said, no one's going to want to play them, especially if they have to play them in Minnesota.
That's right. Absolutely.
The you know, in the semifinals mm-hmm. in the semifinals of the Open Cup, they're going to get Portland at home. And
I was about to get to that.
On Sunday, August 4th, they play Portland at home, and then Wednesday.
Uh-oh.
August 7th, they play Portland at home. So it'll be MLS game and an Open Cup game, 3 days apart, both in Minnesota.
You know what this means? It means that Korstad's going to have to open up his Airbnb now to all the Portland Timber teams just to stay over.
Oh! It's a good idea.
You're going to play music, aren't you?
Charge them double. It really just depends on... It depends on what their zip code is, where they're from, right?
That's right. That's all that matters.
If you're from Northern Oregon, you're paying double.
That's right. That's right. It's going to be like that commercial. That stupid truck is talking to the guy making all those GIFs on the computer. Doug! It's going to be one of those. But I'll tell you this much, Bruce. Seeing what Minnesota has done, you know, in that game and, you know, against New Mexico United, you know, I think New Mexico United got their foot off the gas. I thought they probably thought, okay, you know, we're good to go. But I also think the yellow card accumulation suspension on Kevon Frater, I think that kind of helped out a little bit too because they had nothing.
I agree.
After
yeah.
all. I mean, to me, that's like 2017, the New York Red Bulls taking on FC Cincinnati at over at Nippert Stadium, and they had Jimmy Fall suspended on yellow card accumulation in the semifinal game against the New York Red Bulls, and they were able to come back in that one and win in extra time 3-2. So, you know, Kevon Frater, you know, if he doesn't get suspended, I think it's a different match.
It could be. There's, you know, obviously there's no way to ever know that. Moore was their best player on the field all night long. He seemed to be everywhere and giving it everything he had, but it wasn't even close to being enough. I mean, Minnesota really took their foot off the gas in that second half. They coasted. And
yeah.
And New Mexico still couldn't even get close to goal.
No. No, I thought I think once it went 5-1, they were shell shocked. I mean, I wouldn't put it past them that they could crawl back into it and claw back into it. But you know, I said to myself, if there's nothing by the hour mark, I think they're dead and buried. And then Ibarra does that, and that's when they're really dead and buried. So
it was over.
That was over. You saw it right
there.
It was over, dead and buried, and that's it.
The best part about New Mexico's trip to Minnesota was their fans. They were phenomenal. We
oh,
heard
yeah.
about them from other games, and they came in a pretty big number. They had even chartered a plane from Albuquerque,
yep.
which was pretty damn cool. And, you know,
yep.
they brought their spirit. They brought their energy. They brought their friendliness. The Minnesota fans and the New Mexico fans had a great time partying together before and after the game. And things went really well. Unfortunately, they took a beating. But the rest of their trip was great. And I think their run in the Open Cup was phenomenal. So So I remember in 2005, Minnesota made a run like that in the Open Cup, and they beat Salt Lake, Colorado, and Kansas City in a row, and then went to the Los Angeles Galaxy and got beat 5-2. And it was a very similar vibe to me from that trip in 2005.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right, Bruce, have a good night. I will talk to you again soon, and hope everything goes well, and good luck in the semifinals against Portland Timbers.
Yeah, thank you. It was always great to talk to you, Daniel.
It's always great to have you on. You take care now, okay?
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right, take care, Bruce. Bye-bye. Bruce McGuire of DeNord joining me to talk about Minnesota United's complete destruction over New Mexico United by a final score of 6-1. And then, of course, there was the Portland Timbers on the road at Los Angeles FC at the Bank of California Stadium. And that was just unreal to see what happened there, because what did Portland do? They snuck one in, a little help from LAFC, and they move on to the semifinals of the Open Cup for the very first time in MLS. Will Conwell, Stumptown Footy, SB Nation colleague, on the match. Will, before we talk about the match, I want to talk about last year. Last year, Portland loses the match in the quarterfinals at Bank of California Stadium. There were issues coming up in that match, apparently, that the Canadian, Mark Anthony Kay, I think that's his name. I know his last name is Kay, but, you yep. know, obviously Canadian international, a Canadian, you know, in U.S. Open Cup play, he does not count as a North American player or as an American player because this is the U.S. Open Cup. He counts as a full international, not as a North American player. Different rules. I know LAFC inquired with U.S. Soccer about his availability. Someone said it's okay. Portland protested it. And then in some ways, basically, it's not really some ways. This is what happened. You know what happened. In U.S. Soccer's own way, they denied the protest, basically. And I felt that match should have been replayed. I really felt the fair way for last year for the Timbers to at least get a second crack at LAFC was to have the match replayed and replayed in Portland because, you know, U.S. Soccer and the Open Cup Committee had a royal screw-up that should have been nipped in the bud and should have been done the fair way. In some ways, this past Wednesday night, did you feel that victory, more revenge against the Open Cup Committee and U.S. Soccer as a whole than it was revenge against LAFC?
You know, I think going into this game in particular, you know, I don't think people in Portland were really thinking about that game too much last year. I mean, yeah, a lot came out of it. You know, the whole back and forth with regards to Mark Anthony Kay and his eligibility and the sort of unwillingness of the governing bodies of the sport to really make any substantive action regarding that. You know, that was something that was always kind of in the background. But really, I think that people in Portland much more focused on the two matches against LAFC this year, being the second game of the season for the Timbers, that 4-1 loss at LA, in which the Timbers, I mean, people didn't really realize how good LAFC actually was at that point, and the Timbers just got savaged by them.
as the Timbers were finding their own footing. And then their second match of the year, which was, of course, the Timbers' home opener, that, you know, they really stumbled in the opening minutes. An unfortunate moment from Jeff Atanella when he gave the ball directly to Carlos Vela with a, you know, open lane to goal, which is not going to go well for anyone. So those two matches were kind of painful points for Timbers fans this season. And I think they were all too present in everyone's mind here going into this game rather than that whole fiasco last year. Because, I mean, really last year, like a lot of stuff has happened since then, right? The Timbers went to the MLS Cup. Like there was, there's so much that had gone on since then. So that one, it's just kind of a one in a long history of Timbers grievances with the with events surrounding the U.S. Open Cup. So yeah, I don't think that was really the big thing that was on people's minds.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, to me, I mean, I wouldn't blame you or any Timber supporter for feeling like, you know, this was an opportunity for at least U.S. Soccer to, you know, come up and say, okay, there's a mistake here. It's our fault. And even though in some ways they did admit it was their fault, you know, to me, they kind of begged Portland to drop their protest just so they can let LAFC take the result where, you know, LAFC, by all rights, of the statutes, did play with a player who not so much was not cup tied, but you know the majority of these rosters are only allowed American players, but you're only allowed a certain amount of internationals, and if that international has a green card, then he counts as an American player, or at least doesn't count as an international and is allowed to play. So to me, I just think that you know, once again, U.S. Soccer last year, you know, should have granted the replay, at least give a replay because it was their mistake. You know, not LAFC's mistake because they did ask, but that was U.S. Soccer's mistake for allowing the, you know, this mistake to just be resulted in the wrong direction. But enough of that. Jeremy Ibobasi does it again for the Timbers. He always finds a way to give Portland that lifeline or that big-time goal to help get a win, and a big win it was to put the Timbers ahead and making LAFC squirm in their own area.
Yeah, it was, you know, some people have, you know, tried to downplay the quality of the goal and the quality of the moment. You know, it was a ball that was knocked to Ibobasi by Jordan Harvey, one of the LA defenders, but you know, it was a class finish, and it was something that frankly was not against the run of play in the game. You know, the Timbers had the better of the chances throughout the match, even if LAFC had a whole lot of possession. You know, so it's you know, it was a strange moment, but Ibobasi was there to take advantage of it, and the Timbers go through, which you know was a lot of fun.
And just to remind everybody, that is a legal goal because once again they changed the law about offside. Because once again, if a defender touches the ball during an attacking run by the opposition, the ball hits the defender and it goes to the attacker who scored the goal, offside resets. So that's a clean goal. That's a legitimate goal. And
yep,
you were right there, Will. That ball was not intended for Ibobasi. It was blocked on the cross. And Ibobasi had every right to convert that chance.
Absolutely.
Yep. So throughout the game, it must have been tough not to have Giovanni Savarese in his technical area. I know his father's not well. Are you aware of the illness that his father has, or is it just he's just not well at all?
No, I'm not aware of the further details. Just that Gio had to head to Italy due to his father's health. So, you know, we wish all the best to him from the folks at Stumptown Footy and from obviously from everyone here in Portland. And you know, it was a shame that Gio couldn't be there for this, but you know, at the same time, it speaks to the quality of the staff that he's brought in and the people that you know, he works with, that Carlos Hermoso was able to step in and, you know, guide the team forward when Gio was not there, especially against a team like LA who, you know, they have a number of really talented, really smart players, and they're, you know, coached by Bob Bradley, who is no slouch himself. So, you know, they're a group that's going to adjust and going to take advantage of any issues that might come up. So the fact that the Timbers were able to see out the game and come through against a group as talented and as able to adjust as that is as much a testament to Gio as it is to anyone else.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to be pretty cool to see Carlos Hermoso getting an opportunity to manage his Timber side out there. And it's going to be pretty fun to see what Gio is going to do in the semifinals. You know, Minnesota United, and I just found this out from Bruce McGuire, who's from DeNord in Minnesota. Portland's going to have an extended stay in St. Paul. I mean, it's just unbelievable that you got a league match in St. Paul against this same side you're going to face in the Open Cup on Wednesday. And who knows? Maybe both of you sides are going to let the B team go out in there in the league match, and you get all the big boys in the Open Cup semifinal match.
Yeah, it's I mean, and you know, we already touched on the LA game last year, but this is actually the same situation that the Timbers found themselves in then. I mean, you know, the Timbers have played a lot of road games in the Open Cup during their time in MLS, a significant amount. But the fact that this is not the first time that things have lined up like this for the Timbers is pretty funny. Now, the fact that they're going up against Minnesota, a team that are on a bit of a streak, you know, who have seemed to turn things around a little bit recently, you know, that's it's not necessarily the ideal, but all respect to Minnesota, Timbers did just come off a set of matches against NYCFC and LAFC and, you know, won both of them. So that's some pretty quality opposition, and they've got to be feeling pretty good about their own current run of form.
I think so. I really think so, because this is going to be a very interesting setup here. But then again, the best thing about this is that you didn't have to play the same teams in league play and Open Cup play in three consecutive rounds. I mean, it was absolutely a nightmare. No, I mean, 2017, Red Bulls played their fourth round match against New York City FC, won that, lost their league match against them, beat Philadelphia Union in a league match, pushed it all the way to penalties in the fifth round, beat the Union. Quarterfinals, they go to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough for their league match, won that. Then they go to Harvard University the next couple of days for their quarterfinal matchup against the same Revolution team, won that 1-0. It wasn't until FC Cincinnati in the semifinals that broke the string. You never thought you'd ever see that in my entire life. You're facing three opponents in the Open Cup, and you're also facing them in league play nearly identical within the same amount of time or just within a week of each other. It was insane.
That is remarkable.
It's unbelievable that the Red Bulls even got to the final back in 2017. I thought they're going to lose it somewhere over there. I thought FC Cincinnati was going to edge them, but you know they came back in that one too. So I mean, just when they were in USL at the time, of course, before they come to MLS this year. But still, though, it's just been crazy. But what do you have to be weary about with, if you don't mind me asking, obviously, with Minnesota United? You saw what they did against New Mexico United. You've seen what they've done the last couple of matches in league play. What is Giovanni Savarese going to do? Or if it's Carlos Llamosa, what will he do? Or either of them do when they get ready to take on a team that's looking really red hot right now?
Well, I think that really looking forward to that game, you know, obviously there's still plenty of packed in matches between now and then. But looking forward to that game, the Timbers really just going to have to concentrate on what it is that they are trying to accomplish. Minnesota, like I said, like you said, is in a strong run of form, and there's no denying that. But I mean, like they beat up on a lower division side. They beat two of the worst teams in the league. They got a good results against Montreal, but like the Timbers reserves almost beat Montreal. Like if not for a couple of unfortunate moments, it's hard to say this stuff and not seem like you're talking crap about Minnesota United, but they could extend this run of form from now until then, and that would be great for them. But you know they've got some more substantive matches before they face the Timbers. I'm interested to see what their form's looking like at that point. All that said, yeah, I mean, you know, the Timbers need to do what they do, and that is hit you on the break and keep their legs fresh.
No, absolutely, because that's the one thing that's going to be big here. They definitely have to keep their legs fresh, or else there's going to be an issue. And we don't want them to have an issue, you know, at all. So we'll see what happens there. But let me just say this. Good luck in the rest of the season. Good luck in the semifinals in the beginning of August. And I will hopefully talk to you again soon. And you have a good night there, Will. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that is Will Conwell, my SB Nation colleague from Stumptown Footy, as once again it is a 1-0 victory by the Portland Timbers to defeat LAFC 1-0. Jeremy Bobasi once again was in an onside position as the cross was blocked by a defender for Los Angeles Football Club, and the ball went back to Bobasi, no offsides, it did reset, and Bobasi scored. So it's a legit goal, and good for him. Now it's time to talk about ESPN Plus. You know, there's nothing more I can say about the fantastic job that ESPN has put into the Open Cup. Every single match of every single round has been streamed on ESPN Plus. And what's even better than to have all these matches streamed, and even though the majority of the matches were done at their broadcast center down in South Florida, it was absolutely incredible to see Poppy Miller, Charlie Davies, Mike Watts, Devin Kerr, Jamie Watson, Tyler Terrence in Orlando, David Goss, and Max Bredos and all of the crews to call the games live at their respective stadiums. All four quarterfinal matches were broadcasted live from the stadiums themselves. I was not expecting that. I was not. To have them on air in front of the camera, or not even in front of the camera, but broadcasting it live from Explora Stadium in Orlando, Florida, Fifth Third Bank Field, on the campus of Kennesaw State University, at Allianz Field, at Bank of California Stadium, to see all four quarterfinal matches broadcasted live from the actual stadiums is brilliant. We all know that John Champion and Taylor Twellman are going to broadcast the final on ESPN. But I want to give kudos and congratulations to everyone who was part of these broadcasts. I know the semifinals are coming August 6th, August 7th. These guys have done a fantastic job of covering the games, calling the matches, analyzing everything. It's unbelievable to see the job that ESPN has done. They have gone above and beyond the expectations that I expected from them. And ESPN has to be credited having all these trucks coming to all of these locations across the country to broadcast it through the streaming. If you have not received your account for the ESPN Plus, if you have not paid $5 a month for the streaming account for ESPN Plus, you're missing out right now, because I'm telling you right now, the job that they have done, in my opinion, has been extraordinary, has been exquisite. They have not missed a beat. My hope was that you would have NBC Sports Network, Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 2, or both Fox Sports channels, beIN Sports, maybe even CBS Sports Network, and ESPN broadcasting these games. I thought it would be a collective of having these games broadcasted. YouTube was very good. My Cujo was okay. But honestly, I truly believe that ESPN as a whole did an awesome job up to this point, broadcasting every single match of every single round. I have tried to keep up with every single match of every single round. It's a tough thing to do, being a one-man show. But still, though, I truly believe that what we have witnessed here, it's in good hands with ESPN. It's in very good hands with ESPN. I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't change it. I would not absolutely think about making it go somewhere else. They are to be applauded, ESPN, for doing this. It's growing this game. It's making the Open Cup bigger and better. I love the opening montage. I love the closing montage of the Open Cup broadcasts. It is unreal and it's unbelievable to see what has been done, and it's awesome. I love it. That's all you want. Respect for this game, respect for this tournament, and now it's getting it. I've always said that, you know, more respect has to come to this tournament. And it hasn't. Up until now. I figured it'd be like a slow, steady growth. No. That was my hope because I didn't want to, you know, hope for the sun. I didn't want to, you know, hope too much. Get ESPN to start off with the final, both semifinals, gradually, you know, crawling into the quarterfinals. Maybe a round of 16 match. But no, ESPN said, you know what? We'll do something better. Every round, every match, we're going to broadcast it. It's absolutely fantastic. And once again, I applaud ESPN. I applaud the talented broadcasters that have made their time available to call these matches. It's wonderful, and I am, for one, excited. It's happened. Now it's time for the schedule for the semifinals of the 2019 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. It's a two-day affair. Tuesday night, August the 6th, Orlando City will be hosting Atlanta United FC. That will be at Explora Stadium in Orlando, Florida, the Purple Palace on Church Street, its first ever semifinal match. Wednesday, August the 7th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, the Minnesota United FC will be hosting the Portland Timbers at Allianz Field, St. Paul, Minnesota, again streaming live on ESPN Plus, and then the final, wherever it will be, not in Portland, on ESPN, the main channel. This is exciting. This is unbelievable. This will be a fun time, a fantastic match. I cannot wait. Let's get it on. Let's go for it. Let's go. I really do hope that we get ourselves two great semifinals and we get an excellent championship final. This is what it has to be. It's wonderful. It's excellent. I cannot wait. I cannot wait to go. I cannot wait to go and see them go after it. It's going to be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. It's going to be exciting. I cannot wait. And let's all hope that Taylor Twellman's predictions at halftime for all these Open Cup shows, these broadcasts, they all come true. And I also want to say, you know, great job by both Taylor Twellman and John Champion for their halftime broadcasts and all the production broadcasts. You know, great insight, great discussion from both men. And next season, if the Des Moines Menace return to the Open Cup and qualify for it, I am going to start a petition for having Taylor Twellman take John Champion to Des Moines, Iowa, and watch the Menace perform. I'm demanding it. I want that to happen. I hoped it would have happened this year. It did not. But that's okay. I want to say thank you to my guests tonight. Jason Longshore, 92.9 FM The Game, radio analyst for Atlanta United, broadcasts on the radio. Michael Sitrow, the mainland, Orlando, Florida. Bruce McGuire of DuNord on Minnesota United FC. And my other SB Nation colleague, Will Conwell of Stumptown Footy on the Portland Timbers. Join me this coming Monday, blogtalkradio.com/FourYearSteamsFire. Have a good night, everybody. This has been the U.S. Open Cup quarterfinal review show. As always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night. Take care. So long. And bye-bye for now. So long, everybody, and have a good night.